good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. My panel today, Jack Chambers, Government Chief Whip and Minister for Sport, the Gaeltacht and Defence. Roisin Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin spokesperson on enterprise, trade and employment, and Danny McCoy, CEO of IBEC. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie or tweet to @SaturdayRTE. Now, I'll get to my panel in a moment, but first I want to go to our Cork studio where Colm Henry, the Chief Clinical Officer of the HSE, is standing by for us. Thank you for joining us, Colm.
Not at all. Thank you, Kitty.
Colm, many people may be alarmed at the news there that they will have heard in the bulletin that the vaccination of over 70s may be delayed because of these supply problems with the AstraZeneca vaccine. This is what was acknowledged by the Taoiseach in his interview with Brendan O'Connor there. Can you tell us any more about this?
Well, of course, it's disappointing to hear that the doses that we're depending on to roll this vaccine into this vulnerable cohort, beginning, of course, with over 85s and working our way down to over 70-year-olds out there in the community, to hear news that we may not get the stocks we were expecting. Nevertheless, we it's important to offer hope still. We're waiting on finalisation of those numbers, and that will be worked out early next week between the EU member states and AstraZeneca, and of course our own Department of Health and HSE will be taking a keen interest in this.
But if, as we're told, Colm, that it could be 60% less supply available to us for the first quarter, that would have a massive impact, given how many of our eggs we have placed in the AstraZeneca basket.
It would, if it turns out to be so. But I would say there's been many turns in the road and bumps in the road to date, and there will be many more. And we heard similar reports from Pfizer and about shortfall of supplies, which did not turn out to be so as bad as predicted. So I would urge caution till we hear the final numbers through AstraZeneca. And can I say in the meantime, Katie, we are ploughing ahead with that exercise of the most vulnerable of the older in residential care settings. By tomorrow, we'll have hopefully hit nearly 70,000 between workers and residents in residential care settings, and they will all have received as much as possible, received their first dose by the end of next week. So we are progressing.
That's still a delay in what our original targets were, though. Isn't it a significant delay?
We're doing this under very difficult circumstances. There are outbreaks in nursing homes, and up to 25, maybe higher percent of nursing homes. And as people will know from previous communication, that people who are actively sick or recovering from the illness, the vaccine is contraindicated. But we are going into all such settings, including where there are outbreaks, to try and vaccinate as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, and then progress to the second vaccine.
Okay, and just in relation to that, you mentioned it there, the Pfizer-BioNTech supply issue. Is that sorted now? Are we back on track with the supply of that vaccine?
We have a confirmed supply that will bring us through to mid-February, that will allow us to complete those two dose schedules for nursing home residents and staff, and also allow us to complete the schedule of healthcare workers who receive the first dose. That's over 70,000 to date.
Okay, yeah. So in relation to the healthcare workers, because they were the ones that were sort of pushed back a little because of that supply issue, Are they going to be getting their the ones that were pushed back and didn't get their first dose last week, are they getting it next week?
It's not a question of push back, Katie. It's a question of getting to as many frontline healthcare workers as we can, with there's upwards of 190,000 people working in healthcare in some shape or form in the country, and a significant proportion of those will be direct facing in terms of patient care. We have used a framework which you sent out to all hospitals, community settings, that we want to apply for the use of the vaccine. At this point in time, we can complete vaccination of those people who've got the first dose. That's about 73,000. When we finish the cycle of vaccinations in nursing homes and the second dose for these people, and we get additional doses of
Okay, so Pfizer just because I know a lot of healthcare workers are really, really hanging on every word of this now. They really are anxious to get their vaccinations. Are you saying that if you didn't get your first dose so far to date, that you won't get your first dose until all of those who have gotten that dose have had their second dose? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is, based on the evidence, is we have to complete the two-dose schedule, which means we have to complete the dosing schedule for those who got the first dose. Bear in mind, Katie, that the evidence for this vaccine is based on two doses given within a set time.
No, I think everyone understands that, Colm. Just to be clear, you're saying that healthcare workers who haven't so far gotten their first dose will not be getting that dose in the coming weeks?
And we are hoping to begin new cohorts of healthcare workers in the first to second week of February, depending on confirmed deliveries.
Okay, so that's not going to happen until the first or second week of February?
No, certainly not the second.
There'll be great disappointment at that.
There is, and we've communicated out to the system to say that we, as soon as we get confirmation of delivery of stock from Pfizer, and we believe at this stage we're looking at probably the second week of February to resume addressing priority healthcare workers with that first dose of Pfizer vaccine.
Okay, can I move you on then to the infection levels in hospital? I know that I will be talking to Phil Nihay shortly, but they have a statement out, the INMO have a statement out today saying that infection rates in hospitals are now out of control and that there are basic measures that should be in place by now that simply are not there.
Could I say that what I certainly agree with is infection levels are out of control, and that they're out of control everywhere, not just hospitals. They're out of control in the community, and they're 10 times, even though we're seeing falling levels, we're still seeing a 5-day average of 2,500 cases per day, 10 times what it was at the beginning of December. Of course, we've learned not just through this experience in the third surge, but through the first surge in particular, that high levels of community transmission will inevitably lead to high levels of infection and outbreaks in hospital settings.
I think the figures are quite shocking. If there is 1,893 COVID cases in hospital today, can you tell us how many of those actually contracted COVID in hospital?
We can say exactly in the past week, we've been tracking cases of what we call healthcare acquired COVID infections since June the 22nd. Throughout summer, they were in small single figures, and we began to see a rise to double figures in October. At the end of December, through the first weeks of January, we saw those cases rise from 40 to 50 per week of healthcare associated COVID infection to 150, and in the latest figure, 450 cases in 1 week. So the number of new cases that arise because in a hospital setting have risen quite dramatically since the end of December and throughout January.
So would that tally with what the Taoiseach has said this week, that about a third of the cases that we're now treating in hospital for COVID, acquired COVID in hospital?
There's a great deal of variation between, and much of it is dependent on outbreaks within hospital settings. Where we have greater numbers of outbreaks and more serious outbreaks, we see greater numbers of secondary transmission. And could I say, in response to the other part of your question, Katie, there have been huge efforts made nationally, but particularly at local level, in terms of protecting patients and services. Hospitals are unrecognisable from what they were like in the first surge, in terms of their structure, their layout, their streaming, the testing of patients coming in, the screening of staff, the instructions of staff to stay at home with symptoms, triggered testing of staff and and patients at certain levels of infection and outbreaks.
Sorry to cut across you, Colm, I'm just so anxious to get through all the very important issues we have to talk to you about. The PPE issue, the INMO statement saying that we need a national requirement for these FFP2 masks to be used across all healthcare settings, because many of our healthcare workers are just wearing these basic surgical masks, which are not good enough.
Well, our infection prevention control advice has evolved in line with our evolved knowledge and awareness of how this virus behaves.
Why don't all our healthcare workers have these masks then?
These masks are advised for particular settings initially during the first and second surge, and based on the evidence we knew at the time, they were advised for when staff were engaged what's called aerosol generating procedures. We now know with this new strain that it is much more transmissible, so we've changed the advice in the use of FFP masks and lowered the bar for their use so that it's based on any risk assessment locally in terms of the likelihood of COVID outbreaks.
Are they available for all healthcare workers who believe they require them?
We have lowered the bar that based on local assessment and risk assessment based on clinical advice locally, they should be made available to staff if needed.
But are they available? Is the
question.
Yes,
they are. We've seen a 5 to 10-fold increase in demand in FFP masks over the past 2 weeks, and that reflects the increased demand and increased use.
What about the distance between beds?
The distance between beds, our instruction in line with what the WHO instructed and many other countries is, we say that there should be at least 1 metre distance between patients in healthcare settings, but that doesn't pertain everywhere. In uncontrolled settings such as waiting rooms,
is 1 metre, and we're one, we were told 2 metres if you're out for a walk with somebody. You're saying it's 1 metre is acceptable between beds in a healthcare setting?
We base this on that healthcare settings are largely controlled settings. We test patients coming in for COVID. We test, we have triggered testing during outbreaks. We have use of PPE. We have use of infection prevention and control measures. Healthcare is much safer than it was at the beginning of COVID, and there's much more control measures and much greater sense of awareness.
But did you not just do a study last week telling us you had a 6 times higher exposure to COVID in a healthcare setting than in the community?
But that the primary outcome of that study, Katie, the precise study, which looked at 4,000 healthcare workers, was it showed a huge variation in seroprevalence between healthcare workers between Dublin and Galway, and that the single greatest predictor of this was local community transmission. And it is an inescapable and uncomfortable fact that where there's high levels of uncontrolled community transmission, despite our best measures, it is impossible to keep this virus out of hospital settings.
Are you satisfied that enough is being done to keep healthcare workers and patients safe in our hospitals at this moment with this new variant now in so high and prevalent in the community?
I'm certainly not satisfied with the levels of disease we have in the community, because it presents a huge threat not just to patients in the community but to our services and to our staff and to our patients.
Can I ask you in relation to, just before I leave the infection control, the issue of testing around outbreaks. Did the HSE introduce a national outbreak task force?
We have a national outbreak task force in place for acute hospital settings, yes.
This is only since December, though, is it?
Correct, but yes, but that infection prevention control measures and testing strategy predated that. But we have, and since the figures began to rise, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, of healthcare associated infection, we trigger an outbreak management committee.
Okay, and just the other bad news, or I suppose worrying news that emerged yesterday evening was Boris Johnson confirming new details about this variant, and saying that their scientists now believe it may be up to 30-40% associated with a higher mortality rate. Is that of serious concern?
It is. There's some evidence in the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and from the Imperial College London using a variety of methodology which suggests a relative risk of mortality of about 1.3. Now, much more study is needed to confirm this, but these are pointers towards not just increased transmissibility of this virus, but potentially a more virulent form, which we didn't believe until these studies are beginning to emerge. But more study is needed. But what it does do is increase our hopefully our collective and individual awareness of how important it is to adhere to all those measures that we know break down transmission of the virus and prevented jumping from person to person or from place to place.
Finally, before I let you go, Colm, the word out of the CUH, where you are down there today, they've exceeded their critical care capacity since last night. We know the CEO there is calling for volunteers to cover 12-hour shifts in ICU over the coming weeks. We're hearing there's no spare ICU capacity, no spare ICU beds, I should say, in 12 out of the 28 acute hospitals around the country now. Where is this going to go over the next week or indeed the next number of weeks?
Katie, the situation in critical care at this point in time is precarious. I cannot say any. It is still within our control. What we are seeing now is we are going right into that surge capacity we built up over the summer. We are redeploying staff, the staff we trained during the summer. And thankfully, we had planned for this in terms of procurement of devices. So in addition to those 215 so patients with COVID in ITU, which is an extraordinary number with a singular disease, we have 430 patients outside ITU on some kind of device support, whether it's high flow oxygen or non-invasive ventilation. That's an extraordinary figure. But again, if I could say that, I give tribute on air to our staff who are not just redeployed staff who are working double shifts. In Cork, you mentioned this morning, we have examples of consultants, GPs, and manager of one local hospital, South Infirmary Hospital herself, a trained nurse, all offering shift work and voluntary work to support the additional 3 or 4 beds in the CUH needed last night.
Okay, Colm Henry, many thanks for joining us from our Cork studio today. Just before I move on, because I want to go on to Phil Nihay in a moment, but can I bring you in, Roisin Shortall, in relation to that news about the AstraZeneca vaccine shortfall and the impact that might have on our rollout?
Yes, Katie, that news overnight is really disappointing. We're in a situation now where there is huge uncertainty about all aspects of this. You know, uncertainty in relation to the supplies of the vaccines, but also its efficacy. And there's also uncertainty, of course, about the virus and the likely behaviour of the virus in respect of new variants and how it might mutate and adapt to the vaccines that are becoming available. So, you know, I said a few weeks ago on this programme, and I repeat that this must be regarded now as a national emergency. What the government has been doing and what everybody has been working on over recent months is not working. And we need to take a new approach. We need stricter lockdowns, hard and all as that is going to be. But we have to do that. Our health service is overwhelmed. People are at breaking point, and we need a new approach. And it's not just about moving immediately. We do need to move immediately in respect of restrictions. But we also need to have a longer term plan. And, you know, we can't be operating on the basis of a 4-week timescale, which is what the Taoiseach seemed to be indicating, that we'll continue with this review in 4 weeks. Rolling lockdowns are not working. Okay. We have to face that, and we have to take a new approach.
Okay.
And I believe very firmly that that approach has to be a zero COVID approach.
OK, Roisin, we will be getting back to that issue later in the programme. But for now, I want to bring in Phil Nihay, the INMO General Secretary. Phil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Phil, you were listening to Colm Henry there. He's saying basically that the prevalence or the level of infection in our hospitals is basically due to the high levels of infection in the community.
I think he's admitting and agreeing that it is out of control. We know from NPHET's correspondence to the minister, Dr. Tony Holohan writes to the minister quite regularly. We have copies of those correspondences. They describe open clusters in acute hospitals. In January, on the 6th of January, there were 79 open clusters associated with 32 acute hospitals. This is an emergency. There is absolutely no other way of describing it. And right now, we are not satisfied. I heard what Colm Henry said in respect of the masks. We have been advised this week that vaccines for those that haven't already been vaccinated will be delayed. So that means the largest group of workforce that are going in to these precarious, very high-risk situations and getting infected themselves are nurses and healthcare assistants. They're the two categories. They make up just under 50% of the entire infection amongst healthcare workers. They have to have protections that are better than what is there currently, because obviously currently isn't sufficient.
Well, if I took up Colm Henry correctly there, he's saying that they are advising that where the locally it is deemed of sufficient risk, that those masks are being made available to healthcare workers. Is that not the case?
That's not the case. And I'm glad that Colm said that, because that might bring a bit of reality into local managers who have written to our staff in the last 24 hours telling them that those masks will not be provided to them. This is not an issue that the health service can play around with. Nurses have died in this country. Other healthcare workers have died in this country because they are going right into the eye of this storm. This is huge risk. Across the world, healthcare workers have been to the forefront of taking on the pandemic. We cannot mess with safety. That's why this week we are so frustrated at the delay in protecting workers' health that the HSE have demonstrated that we have referred the matter as a complaint to the Health and Safety Authority, because if this was a meat factory or if this was a shop, the Health and Safety Authority would have the right to inspect. They must inspect, and they have to inspect. Just because it's a hospital, it is still a workplace. And the protections for those that are working in those environments must be completely and utterly independently assessed to make sure that if there isn't a vaccine, well, then everything else must be in place to ensure that the risk is at its minimum.
In relation to those risks, you're raising that issue about the distance between beds that patients are being treated on in our hospitals, and also testing in response to outbreaks. What is happening in hospitals now when an outbreak is identified?
Well, the HSE have a policy which they issued on the 24th of August, which you know, defines the 2 metre in the community, but saying that in hospitals, that 1 metre, because of the aerosol generation of this virus, is sufficient. We don't accept that. We believe that needs to be reviewed, and particularly the information we're now getting about the UK variant, the higher viral load, the nurses and other healthcare workers, in most instances, cannot stay 2 metres or 1 metre away from a patient. But patients should be 2 metres away from each other. We have a long discussion stroke negotiation with a private hospital system in this country, which we still have not got definitive answers about how many beds will be available to the public health service. If the 1,900 available beds were available, we might be able to reduce the space between beds in public hospitals. If our focus is safety for patients and staff, well, then we have to make much, much sharper decisions much earlier, because currently these decisions are taking too long.
Okay, I just want to bring in Louise O'Reilly there. You were shaking your head right through a lot of Colm Henry's interview, Louise.
Well, I was, and I'm very, very disturbed to hear that the cohort of healthcare workers, who, as Phil rightly describes, are the people who are going in to the eye of this storm, that those healthcare workers will not now, those who haven't received the vaccine, will not now be vaccinated. It won't even start until the second week in February. I think the least, the absolute least that can be done for our healthcare workers is that we give them the right equipment to go in and do the job that we expect them to do. I mean, you know, it's all very well to stand up in the Dáil and give them a round of applause, but actually when they need us, you know, our government is found wanting, and that's not right. The very least that can be done is that they get access to PPE that will protect them. We have huge rates of infection among healthcare workers. We had the highest rates of infection among healthcare workers at the start of this pandemic. I had hoped that the government would have learned lessons in relation to that. The fact that they haven't, and we now have the leader of the largest nursing union in the state on the radio again asking for PPE. It is like we're back to March again, back to March and April. This is not acceptable. They should have known that this was, they knew that this was a possibility, and they should have made arrangements. It is not good enough now to be sending men and women into our hospitals when they are overcrowded, when there isn't sufficient distance between the beds, and when they find themselves in a situation whereby they cannot even access the vital PPE that they need.
Minister.
Yeah, look, I think what Colm and Phil have set out shows the extreme difficulty that we have in our hospital system at present, and the scale of the burden of this disease on our community, and obviously the impact that's having on frontline healthcare workers. And Colm set out, I think he wrote to all HSE operations that FFP2 masks should be provided based on local risk assessments.
Are you shocked to hear there that that's not happening?
It should be happening.
But it's not happening.
And I mean, based on the local risk assessments, the FFP2 masks and gowns should be provided to healthcare workers.
I think we're all agreed on that, but I was asking, are you shocked to hear it is not, according to Phil Nihe? Her members are saying they're not getting access to those masks.
Well there needs to be operational follow-through from the people who are responsible in the HSE for that. And as a government, we absolutely support the public health and scientific position, which has changed as well. If you look at, and Phil mentioned this as well in the context of the variant, and Colm mentioned this as well, where the aerosol spread of this disease, and I think if you look at the infection control frameworks in hospitals, there's a rolling update to that as we learn more about the disease and as we learn more about the variants in particular. But I support the infection control guidance, and as that's being updated, and FFP2 masks should be delivered at an operational level based on local risk assessments. That should be happening at hospitals as they're required.
But overcrowding is a very significant risk when you talk about infection control management, be it MRSA, the winter vomiting bug, whatever it is that you're referring to. Overcrowding is a very significant risk. So Phil has asked a very reasonable question, in my opinion, in relation to the 1,900 beds within the private hospital system. How many of those are going to be available? Because if they were available now, and God knows we gave these people a lot of money back in March, April and May, then they could be utilised. That would ease. And I mean, Jack, overcrowding is a major factor in infection control.
Then the private hospitals are, you know, they're living in the community as well, and they're having huge staffing issues. So is there not a question mark over how many beds are going to be because their staff numbers are severely depleted because of people out for COVID.
The burden of this disease across all sectors, and in particular, if you have the combined risk of community transmission and then hospital transmission for healthcare workers, that is a significant. So the most important factor here is that we reinforce the message that people need to stay at home to protect the very people in our hospitals, and that we lower the disease burden, and that will allow more frontline healthcare workers to return to work who are presently maybe infected or may have.
But I think people would like to know, out of the 1,900, how many are actually going to be operational.
Can I ask you, Phil, the Taoiseach, in his interview with Brendan O'Connor before this programme, said that he was basically pointing to the new variant as being behind this big surge in hospital-acquired infection of COVID. Would you accept that that's part of the picture?
Well, I think the evidence that we're seeing across the UK and in Ireland is that, you know, the relaxation of the public health measures most certainly increased the transmission. This virus travels from person to person. What the UK variant has done is it has accelerated in the community the amount of the virus that is being shed. So, in other words, it is, of course, now going to be much easier to catch the virus, unfortunately, because of this variant. But the real issue here is we have a hospital system that we have known for years doesn't have sufficient staffing from a nursing and midwifery point of view. We've been campaigning. Our members went on strike for more staff, for God's sake. And we now have a system that is completely and utterly overburdened. And what I really have to impress upon the representative of government in the studio today is that if there is any change to the variant or to the scheduling of vaccinations for frontline healthcare workers, that will be a huge problem. So I'm asking Jack Chambers there to confirm that there will be, regardless of lobby groups, there will be no change to the scheduling of frontline healthcare workers for this vaccine, because we need them to keep people alive.
That confirmation from Colm Henry there, that if you haven't had your first jab as a healthcare worker, that the next round of those first jabs won't be happening until the first or second week in February. Would that be disappointing for your members, Phil?
Absolutely disappointing. And in fairness, it's inexcusable, because when we had supply, the manner in which it was addressed at the beginning up until the 12th of January, until the first memo came out, seemed to be, oh, there you go, there's your amount of vaccine, and distribute it amongst your staff, with no priority to those who are more susceptible to infection. Obviously, the WHO has confirmed, if you are a patient-facing healthcare worker, you are the most at-risk person in any community of contracting this horrible virus. Therefore, we waited until the 12th of January to issue memos to the system, to managers in the system, to tell them how to distribute the vaccine. That's inexcusable. It's simply inexcusable. When we have nurses dying in this country and other healthcare workers dying because they are putting their life at risk.
Okay, let me put that to the minister here, Jack Chambers.
Yeah, the just to say on the first question, the prioritisation is for frontline healthcare workers. And if you look at the National Immunisation Advisory Committee's sequencing, they've prioritised frontline healthcare workers, and many frontline healthcare workers have received the vaccine. I accept the uncertainty over supply presently, particularly with Oxford AstraZeneca, presents challenges in the next month. And obviously there's going to be engagement at an EU level.
Inexcusable, Phil Nihay was saying.
The fact that Oxford AstraZeneca have brought this uncertainty on supply is absolutely regrettable, and I think that's why there has to be a robust engagement from the EU with Oxford AstraZeneca, because obviously a lot of the planned supply from a European context, and we have a European purchasing agreement, but there's been accelerated rollout for in long-term care facilities in the last 2 weeks, and the next sequencing is obviously to recommence frontline healthcare workers, and I support that. And I support the fact that I've spoken to many nurses and many frontline healthcare workers.
It's all up in the air, though, now, isn't it? I mean, you can't here today guarantee to Phil Nihay that her members are going to get that vaccination, even on the delayed programme they've now been given.
What I can say is, well, no, the National Immunisation Advisory Committee have absolutely stated that frontline healthcare workers are prioritised. They're number two on the schedule, and long-term care facilities are number one. And many of that we're nearing conclusion on that, except for the cohort of nursing homes where there has been an outbreak. So there is the certainty is that when supply increases, and that's obviously we're at the behest of what we receive from a European context.
Okay.
We will roll it out, and everything Ireland has received, we have actually gotten out, and we're actually, and in terms of the European league table, we've been efficient in rolling out the vaccine. But I accept there is uncertainty for some healthcare workers, and also for many of our over 70s who are hopeful that the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine would provide certainty for February and March, and that's why there should be a robust engagement with that company.
Okay.
who aren't fulfilling their contractual obligations with Europe, and that's not acceptable.
Okay, I'm going to have to take a break there.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And I'm going to move on now. I'm going to say thanks to Phil Nihay, who joined us there as the INMO General Secretary, Phil Nihay. But I'm going to move on now to the issue of travel, which has really blown up in the last week. We heard the Taoiseach there in his interview this morning saying that we are now considering quarantining people who arrive in this country without a negative test for COVID for 5 days. We on the programme have received figures from the Department of Justice saying that between Saturday the 16th of January and Thursday the 21st, that's last Thursday inclusive, that there were a total of 11,049 arrivals at Dublin Airport and approximately 80 recorded breaches. That's 0.7% of those total arrivals, and overall approximately 110 recorded breaches of the travel regulations at all ports and airports over that 6 day period. And we're told that files will be sent to the DPP in all of these cases. Now, I heard the Taoiseach saying, oh, on Thursday there was just one person came in without a negative test, but actually they're the full figures for those 6 days. I want to bring in Danny McCoy, IBEX Danny McCoy, in relation to this travel issue, and that confirmation by the Taoiseach this morning that a 5 day quarantine is being considered in relation to people arriving without a negative COVID test. How would the people you represent respond to that?
So look, Katie, everybody realises we're now really seized by a really crisis situation. And so measures that need to be put in place to try and bring this under control, I think everybody's willing to cooperate and go there. And that includes on how we actually police this whole island. So I think the citizens on the two islands, both Britain and Ireland now, I think that's going to be part of the solution. We're outside the Schengen Agreement in the EU. Britain's out of the EU now, but we do have this common travel area. So it has to be coordinated between the two islands. And I think that becomes the necessity. And whatever length of time is required, we need to know what that is, and we need to act accordingly. But we do need a plan now. This has taken on a different form of crisis. It might be still called coronavirus, but it's certainly right across the Northern Hemisphere now. Everybody's dealing with this incredibly potent pressure point. And I think coordination is the only way out of this. And that includes coordination here on the island.
So if we moved on, because obviously this is being considered a conservative approach in relation to managing incoming traffic. If there were moves to widen that out to all passengers arriving in the country, how would the business community respond to that?
Well, there are some essential activities that will be required. So a bit like the notion, I'm sure we're going to come on to it, and I think we didn't fully understand this. When people say zero COVID, what they mean is zero community transmission, that we don't know where it's occurring, that we can track and trace it, but we can't get rid of it completely. Similarly, the notion that there'll be absolutely no travel has lots of consequences for the production of medicines, medtech, and so on as well. So 11,000 in 6 days is actually a really small number, but it could be lower in terms of essential services. What were those people doing? If they were taking holidays or whatever, then that's clearly, given the national emergency, something that needs to be stopped. But we need to get a short, sharp, whatever, the next month to try and get this under control, because the issue still remains, even though we're in the crisis, the livelihoods of people here. matter. And entire sectors will need to have some guidance that we've got this under control. For the sake of the health system at the moment, people are willing to consider a new strategy. The Taoiseach this morning
would they be willing
put
to consider
that the strategy is changing now from suppress release. It'll be an impossibility to kind of hold this together after a few weeks if there's no targets put in place in the quid pro quo here for society and for business to say, what is the state going to deliver in terms of milestones? What are the numbers that are going to be the target here? So we need a refreshing of the strategy. We need everyone on board. But right now,
what are the numbers are going to be the target here?
So in other words, what level of cases or ICU or whatever that we start to see in the initial phases, obviously the schooling and the children coming back, but for planning for livelihoods and for sectors, we're going to need this idea.
The Taoiseach said today that we wouldn't consider easing restrictions unless the cases were, the figures that they were talking about was between 100 and 200 cases.
Absolutely, but what commitments are we going to make on use of antigen testing? What in terms of track and trace are we going to have in this crisis? So while we're talking, and rightly, about what's happening in our hospital system at the moment, we now need to see all elements of this strategy. I think people are willing to go for a harder suppression to bring these numbers down.
Zero
we need
COVID?
To see what the milestones are. Well, zero COVID in the sense of no community transmission, and that would require local areas becoming rather than these blanket national lockdowns.
Okay, can I
last
bring...
summer, okay. As people keep saying, we saw that there was quite a success in dealing with outbreaks in Kildare, Offaly and Laois. We should have learned from that, but we went back into this national approach, I think, far too soon.
Okay, I want to bring in Róisín Shortall. Róisín, reading between the lines there from Danny McCoy, are you hearing more support for that zero COVID
policy? So. I mean, zero COVID is the term that's used. It's about doing everything possible to get as close to elimination of the virus as possible. And that means, you know, learning from those countries that have been successful in doing that. And, you know, the question now is, what gives us the best chance of survival for people, for businesses, for the entire country? And I'm really sorry to say that what the government has been saying, both today and over recent weeks in relation to travel, is just not true. The health advice in relation to protections in regard to travel is very clear. You need two PCR tests and you need quarantining. Now, what the government proposed or started a couple of weeks ago and what the Taoiseach said today just will not do it. It's been described as half measures. And the latest letter from NPHET that was released on Thursday was very clear about this. NPHET wanted quarantining all along, but they said at an early stage that it wasn't politically feasible. They've said very clearly now in the most recent letter is that any element of discretion in relation to restricting your movements or the second test needs to be removed. And that means very clearly that we need mandatory quarantining. So, you know,
Do you mean by that? I've got a text in here. Katie, could you please ask your guests to spell out what they mean by quarantine? Because it is a major step to take. I mean, I may have taken a discussion on Australian quarantine up the wrong way, but I got the impression that you don't just turn quarantine off. It may remain in place for a year. So maybe you could explain what your sense of what quarantine should be.
Okay. So, Katie, look, I think it's important that as a country, we set a target to drive the virus right down. Now, we did that during the summer when we got it down to almost single figures. We can do that again if there's a very clear target. There's no point in saying we're doing this for a month or we'll review it after 4 weeks. I mean, that just absolutely cripples the country. What we need to do is set a target in terms of number of daily cases and work together to drive that down. And once we do that, then it's a matter of having really good testing and tracing right back the 2 weeks to identify where the transmission is taking place. And then it means controlling the borders in terms of the importation of the virus. And again, I'd say we learn from the countries that are doing that successfully. And the reward for us in doing that is that we can open up our internal economy, we can open up domestic hospitality, schools, social life. And I believe there's a very strong mood now in the country. You know, at this point, the future looks very, very challenging and pretty grim, given the setbacks that we've seen, given the huge pressures on healthcare workers, given the uncertainties about the virus and vaccines. So we have to take that new approach. I believe people will respond to that if government steps up and sets out a very clear pathway to get to the point where, say where New Zealand has been at for several months now, where they're operating pretty successfully and pretty normal life. And, you know, I think that's...
Okay, and I know it's going to be said, but I let Jack Chambers say it in relation to why can't we be New Zealand?
Yeah, look, I respect Roisin's argument, and there are some in the science community
who... There's a lot of support for that argument and noticeably building over the last couple of weeks.
I respect that, but we also have to look at where we are as a country in terms of the north-south dimension, and it is important to mention it because we have, obviously, the political axis between north-south and east-west as well. And there, like the Taoiseach mentioned this in the last day or so, he's had a discussion with Boris Johnson on how a two-island approach would work. There's engagement between the Northern Executive and the government here on how we could align public health measures. But it's also important to say as well, we're also within a European...
But you see, we hear this, we can't do it because we've no alignment with the North. But then you hear that Robin Swan has been asking for cooperation in relation to sharing of information about people arriving and in this country for 10 months and he hasn't got responses to letters.
No, there have been discussions. Minister Donnelly has spoken to him directly about that, actually, and they're regularly discussing that.
This has been going on since the start of the summer.
Can I just say as well, though, in terms of the Cabinet next week is looking at introducing a new system and trying to improve enforcement and compliance, and also taking into account...
Do you accept that goes nowhere near what we are told is required in order to prevent the virus being seeded from abroad? One test taken 72 hours before you arrive in the country is not going to tell us whether that person is likely to seed another case.
There's a number of options being looked at. Obviously, the first one is to look at, say, the third countries where there's a high burden of the new variant, and to bring in a strict quarantine regime for those countries.
Why are we only looking at this now?
There's also the importance around trying to improve enforcement and compliance for those who are being requested to stay at home and where they're being asked to restrict their movements.
49% of people never put their address on those passenger locator forms.
Yeah, and that they're going to be updated, and that's the whole. That's
they
what
just
saying.
Sailed through they're, the airport.
Well, just to say,
like, and nobody followed up to check on them.
Well, just say
and
you're.
Like, we now have a situation. Okay, so of the 140,000 people, I think it was that came here by air and sea between the 3rd of December and the beginning of January, we know that 49% of those didn't even put down where they were staying. We also know that in November, Tánaiste said that the government were considering enforcement. What level of consideration, you sit at the cabinet table, what level of consideration was given to that enforcement? What can you tell us was the outcome of that consideration? Because I think it was just something that he said to get him through the 4 minutes under leaders' questions, and then nothing happened as a result of that, because we find ourselves now in a situation where An Taoiseach is saying, yes, we're going to give consideration to additional measures.
There will be additional measures, and also, Jack Chambers, can I put you
because this is what people out there are thinking right now, because any conversation you've had about this with anyone, you should know this yourself from your own constituents. People are saying, where is the sense of urgency about this? If there's 2,000 people coming in, and okay, the numbers are down, 2,000 people arriving here every day, even at this low ebb of numbers. And
There is urgency. That's why we brought in the PCR test 72 hours prior.
Jack, as a doctor, I'm asking you, can you stand over a single test without mandatory quarantining? Are you ignoring the advice from NPHET? Well, I mean, stop playing games with people.
I know,
you
that's
need
very
to do this properly.
Very, like, are you saying, Roisin?
You are that, in relation to travel.
Are you saying that
you're ignoring the?
Are you saying that it's possible?
Are
you saying that it's
it?
Possible next week to automatically quarantine the 33,000 who may arrive?
No, but I think it's fair to say if you've been considering it since last November, Jack, you would have developed your thinking on this a little bit more.
Why are you doing things that don't work, Jack?
We are doing things.
Why are you doing things that don't work?
We're moving in unison as well from a European context on trying to restrict the movement into
hopefully
the country
you
from
will be
countries that are
to,
that,
to move.
Can I also say just
because
reason,
you have shown no leadership.
Is that the plan, Jack Chambers? We're waiting for Europe to tell us to do it.
Absolutely not. And that's why a number of options are being considered by Cabinet next Tuesday in relation to quarantining, in relation to compliance, and in relation
there's
to enforcement.
There's no indication that you're going
to go. What the Taoiseach is talking about today is nonsense.
That's just dismissive negativity.
No, it's a bit of realism.
And can I just say, in relation to
Jack is trying to make a point.
Okay, we'll just let Jack Chambers respond to you there.
Just say, like Louise, again, you know, this is the revisionism from Sinn Féin. Mary Lou MacDonald, I remember in the Dáil in early December, was asking that there needed to be common sense and compassion when it came to family returning home. There wasn't a whole lot from Sinn Féin about
quarantine. In March, we called for an all-Ireland strategy. In May, we called for quarantining.
You're in the Northern Executive, that has a much more liberal regime on travel. Can I answer that, please?
So you well know that Sinn Féin is a partitionist. We'll get Louise to answer that after this break.
Tweet at SaturdayRTE.
Very quickly, Louise, the response to that claim, that the regime in Northern Ireland is actually more liberal in terms of travel than here. Okay.
So Sinn Féin have consistently called for an all-Ireland strategy. It's 10 and a half, nearly 11 months now since the first time we had said that. It is really important that we maximise every single advantage that we have from being an island. And
But your party is in an executive that is standing over a more liberal regime.
We are in a five-party power sharing arrangement, and we have consistently backed the public health advice in the north. And when it was neither popular nor profitable, I can tell you Michelle O'Neill has stuck her neck out and has backed the public health advice at every turn. We have also backed mandatory testing and quarantine in relation to travelling. Okay. We've been doing that since last May.
The public health advice when it came to the Bobby
We
Story
have been
funeral.
Doing that since last May.
Can you just let me finish my point, please, because you got a good enough run beforehand.
We have consistently backed the public health advice.
There was a huge contradiction when it came to Can I speak without interruption?
Please, we have consistently backed the public health advice. Yeah, Michelle O'Neill has repeatedly looked to see the Dublin government back us on that, and I want to see them doing that.
I want
as well.
To bring Danny McCoy back in, Danny, because I think a lot of your the people you represent will have been listening closely to the Taoiseach talking about how they're now going to approach the easing of restrictions and talking about a very conservative approach being taken over the next 6 months. Are your members now resigned to, you know, having the shutters down until into the summer?
Well, first of all, the range of businesses, you know, the extremities in terms of consumer facing, like hospitality and events and so on, will be, I'm sure, looking for more certainty, but realising right now we've got to bring those numbers down. We need to bring some stability. Similarly, across those who are still open and essential services, we want to ensure that we see what the actual milestones are here. And, you know, issues like antigen testing and so on, the PCR is really important, gold standard, but we've got to use every element that we have here. The track and tracing, once we get the numbers down, I think will be critical to the reopening. But right now, the strategy, which was suppressed release, the government sent the signal today, the release part is we've no idea what's the trigger for release anymore. And I think that's going to be needed in the next couple of weeks. Right now, of course, we've got to get the numbers down, get the pressure off the hospital system.
Jack Chambers, that's what Danny McCoy is taking away from that interview with the Taoiseach.
No, the Taoiseach was very clear that when we last lifted restrictions, we had a 5-day moving average of about 200, and it's now over 2,000. So we're a long way away from the lifting restrictions, in my view. And can I just say as well, when it comes to, I think speaking to people in the business community and across society, I think people don't want this cycle of uncertainty where they could come out of a lockdown and then there's another series of restrictions. Like, what we need to do is suppress the virus, stay at home, and scale up our vaccinations. And that's what the government has been clear in saying, that there will be an extension of many of the restrictions that we presently have.
Okay, can I just, before, because we're right up against it, but I want to ask you about the schools, because that discussion with the Taoiseach where he said we won't see a million students back before St. Patrick's Day. Are we talking about perhaps staggering people going back, maybe just leaving cert students first, then are we talking about people going back, some students going back Mondays and Tuesdays and other students going back for other days?
Well, we presently have... We have obviously the intention and priorities to get special education returned, and there's positive engagement ongoing about that. And it's about taking into account the public health context at the time. But as it stands, obviously we're going to see an extension of restrictions. And within that, bringing 1 million people mobilising around the community won't be possible over the coming weeks. So the intention is to try and get special education back
that
in cooperation with workers.
From that discussion.
It could be, and that's the public health context we're in. But we want to protect lives and livelihoods, and that's why the government will follow the public health advice next week.
I think the Taoiseach needs to stop flying kites, Jack, because we need to know that there is a plan underpinning what he said this morning on the radio, and the workers in education, the parents whose kids are going into it, they need to see.
We're over time. I have to go. That's all we have time for. The programme today was produced by Mary O'Hagan. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator is Elaine Conlon, and Tom Norton was on sound. From all of us here on the team, enjoy the rest of your weekend.